Well, we are in 1 Samuel chapters 13 and 15 this morning. The story, as you go through, a lot of these passages are narratives, so I include the broader text in on the back of your bulletin. I'll put the broader section, and of course, all of these are part of an even larger story. They're narrative, so you have to kind of read around that, but we don't always read all of it. We're just going to read a little bit in chapter 13 and a little bit in chapter 15 of 1 Samuel. But I do encourage you to read the rest of the story that goes with that. And this morning we're talking about really two kinds of rebellion. We're going to talk about two kinds of rebellion. And, you know, there's lots of ways that we rebel. How many of you have seen the movie Cool Hand Luke? It came out in the 60s and is a fairly popular movie. If you've ever, I'm surprised not more people raise their hands. Maybe you just don't want to admit that you've seen it. It's a decent film. It's poignant, and there's a line in that film that many of you probably have heard, and it's often used humorously. But it's the line, "What we have here is a failure to communicate." How many of you have heard that line before? Okay, very popular line. I've never heard it used in the context that was actually used in the movie, because the movie was all about rebellion. It's about one man's rebellion, and he goes to jail for the rebellion, and in jail he's just rebellious, and not in any kind of terrible, awful way. He's not a murderer. He doesn't abuse people, and so he's got this kind of mild rebellion, if you will, and he suffers for it. And so as you watch this movie, you gain sympathy for him. In fact, I think in our culture we like to have sympathy for rebels. We like the rebel. We look at the rebels as the underdog. We were rebels at one time in our country. And so, you know, as you watch this movie, you get to the end and you feel really, really bad for the main character. And they get you to have that sense where you side with the rebel. But if you think about the movie, everything he did was wrong. Every time he made a choice, he made the wrong choice. And yet, they get you to side with the rebel. We like to do that. In fact, rebellion is so much a part of our culture that the rebellious things become the commonplace things. There's been a lot of news stories and commentary about how tattoos are no longer rebellious. And some of you in here have tattoos. And how there, you know, it used to be a tattoo meant something. A tattoo meant, you know, you were rebelling against authority. Or that you were dangerous. You know, it was only certain kinds of people that had tattoos. But today, they're commonplace, right? Everybody has a tattoo. Well, not everybody, but they're common enough. I would venture a percentage in here, something at least 30% have tattoos. So, maybe not that high. Rebellion is a part of our culture. It's a part of who we are, and so many of our stories are our shared stories. And I mention movies all the time, and not very many of you raise your hands. I don't know what kind of movies you guys watch. I don't know what kind of books you read, because every time I mention one that I think is popular, nobody raises their hand. But all of our culturally shared stories, out of those shared stories, a lot of them deal with rebellion, and we side with the rebel. We like to do that. But rebellion is not a good thing. It is in our minds when you're rebelling against oppression, right? When you're rebelling against oppression, then we want to fight with the underdog, we want to fight for the underdog, and we rejoice at their rebellion. That's not actually a scriptural teaching, though. And we want to side with the rebels, especially when they win. I've said before, this is not unique to me. You've heard this before. History is told by the winners, right? Well, when the rebels win and they tell history, it's the rebels who are in the right. It's the rebels who had the good cause. It's the ones who lost, of course, who had the bad cause and should have lost. I want to just lay that out there because I want us to understand that we are naturally inclined to rebel. There's more to the story, and I'll get that later, that makes it even worse for us. It makes it even harder for us. We'll look at that in a little bit. But I want to read from 1 Samuel chapter 13. And this is about, the story is about Saul, he's become king of Israel, this new nation. This new nation who has rejected God as their king, and so Saul becomes their first human king. And Saul is going to lead them into battle. And Saul is going to protect them from their enemies, the surrounding nations. And Saul is going to provide structure for them as a nation and provide order and unite the people and encourage them. Saul's going to do all that. And so Saul leads his people into battle. Well, before they would go into battle, they would offer a sacrifice and they would seek God's blessing and they would seek God's answer to know, if, is this what we should do and is this the way we should be doing this? As you read through the Old Testament, you see that a lot. The people seeking God. Because it's not Saul providing protection, and it's not Saul uniting the people, and it's not Saul who is going to defeat their enemies. And so the people seek God. And Samuel, who's a prophet, tells Saul, you need to wait. I'm going to be there to offer the sacrifice, and it'll be 7 days before I can get there. And so Saul's waiting. He's waiting this time. The army's gathered. They're all sitting there waiting. They're getting anxious. And Saul's he's going to lose his opportunity for his strategic win. And Samuel hasn't showed up yet. So Saul says, bring me the sacrifice and I'll offer it. And so Saul offers a sacrifice and then Samuel shows up and asks him and says, what have you done? Verse 11. Saul replied, when I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come the set time and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, I thought, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal and I'll have not sought the Lord's favor. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering. Verse 13 says, you acted foolishly, Samuel said. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God, the command the Lord your God gave you. If you had, He would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time. But now your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him leader of his people because you have not kept the Lord's command. That phrase, I just want to point out, the Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. We will look at that next week, at what that means. This week, Samuel condemns and rebukes Saul because he has acted foolishly. He has acted in such a way as to reject God's command. And so God has taken away the kingship from Saul. Seems kind of like a severe response to that one mistake that Samuel made. But remember, this is the leader of Israel, whom the people had chosen because they rejected God. The people had rejected God, and so they chose this leader. And God allowed them to have this king. And so when the king rejects God's command, then that becomes a problem for the whole people. Turn to chapter 15, if you will. Saul continues on in his leadership. He continues to fight for the people. And there's a particular battle that he's told to fight that Saul goes out and he fights this battle. And he and the men, they take some of the what they've captured. They take some of the animals and some of the other stuff. And Only they were told not to. They were told that all of that was to be God's. So chapter 15, verse 1. Samuel said to Saul, "I'm the one the Lord sent to anoint you king over his people Israel. So listen now to the message of the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel when they waylaid them as they came up from Egypt. Now go attack the Amalekites and totally destroy everything that belongs to them. Do not spare them. Put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys." Unfortunately, we don't have time to address this. We don't have time to address that command to destroy everything. But I want to make clear that the command was to destroy everything. Everything. So Saul leads his men and they go and they defeat the Amalekites. Verse 9 says, "But Saul and the army spared Agag, who was the king, and the best of the sheep and cattle, the fat calves and lambs, everything that was good. These they were unwilling to destroy completely, but everything that was despised and weak they totally destroyed. Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel. I am grieved that I have made Saul king, because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions." Samuel was troubled, and he cried out to the Lord all that night. Early in the morning, Samuel got up and went to meet Saul, but he was told, "Saul has gone to Carmel. There he has set up a monument in his own honor and has turned and gone on down to Gilgal." When Samuel reached him, Saul said, "The Lord bless you. I have carried out the Lord's instructions." Us preachers are not supposed to use our children too often as illustrations. So I won't tell you which of my children did this. But when we tell our children that, you know, we've got company coming, like parents, grandparents are coming, and they're going to sleep in your room, in your bed, so you need to clean your room. You need to pick up, put everything away, and so that we can actually clean. And so the kids, they go up and they're working on it for a while. And they come back down. "Did you clean your room?" "Yes." So we go back up there, or we go upstairs to their room, and it looks just as bad as it did before. Now, we're confident that they picked something up. We're confident that they put away some things. But it's still a mess. Okay, look, this is, you know, there's stuff all over the place. You guys need to clean, get everything off the floor. So we set them to it, and they work at it. And they come back down. "Did you clean your room?" "Yes, we've got it. We've got it clean now. We've really got it clean." We go up. We look in. There's a bunch of stuff under the bed, trash on the floor. "Saul, did you do what God commanded?" "Yes! We did everything God told us to do." But Samuel said, "What then is this bleating of sheep in my ears? What is this lowing of cattle that I hear?" Samuel answered, "The soldiers brought them from the Amalekites. They spared the best of the sheep and cattle to sacrifice to the Lord your God. But we totally destroyed the rest. See, we did what you told us to do. We totally destroyed it." "Stop," Samuel said to Saul. "Let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night." "Tell me," Saul replied. Samuel said, "Although you were once small in your own eyes, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel, and he sent you on a mission saying, 'Go and completely destroy those wicked people, the Amalekites. Make war on them until you have wiped them out.' Why did you not obey the Lord? Why did you pounce on the plunder and do evil in the eyes of the Lord?" This is great. I love this. But I did obey the Lord, Saul said. I went on the mission the Lord assigned me. I completely destroyed the Amalekites and brought back Agag, their king. The soldiers took sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best of what was devoted to God, in order to sacrifice them to the Lord your God at Gilgal. Do you see any kind of discrepancy, any problem here? Anything not matching up here? But Samuel replied, verse 22, "Does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the voice of the Lord?" To obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance like the evil of idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. This rebellion of Saul's, he's not fighting against some established authority or power. He's not rejecting the rule of someone else. This rebellion of Saul is not, it's not as shallow as the kind of rebellion that we so closely associate with, and that we often feel connected to. The rebellion of Saul here is the continued denial, the continued objection, the fighting of wills of Saul against God. This is not a fight where Saul's saying, "No, God, I don't want your authority over me." This is not a fight where Saul is saying, "I reject your reality and substitute my own." Saul is not giving a blatant rejection of who God is and God's role and authority. This is important. And in fact, it's actually more problematic than a complete and total and utter rejection and rebellion. You see, because the complete rejection, the complete rebellion is obvious. The complete rebellion is where we can say that person, they're not following God. That person, they don't believe. This is a rebellion that is fought in the will. This is a rebellion that is stemmed in pride. This is a rebellion where we're still on our own path, but we think we're being obedient to God. This is the most difficult of rebellions. This is the kind of rebellion where we give our 10% in our offering, you know, to provide for the lights and the giving and all of that stuff. We give our 10% and we come to church on Sundays and we do all those things that we're supposed to be doing. But we aren't actually doing what God wants us to do. Matthew 23, verse 23, Jesus is speaking, he's preaching to the crowds and to his disciples, and he's giving these lists of woes. They're warnings. You better pay attention to this, because if you continue down this path, it's not going to end well for you, kind of warning. And he says in verse 23, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin." You know, the smallest of spices, the littlest of things. "But you have neglected the more important matters of the law: justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel." I think of whales. You know, they eat krill. And they've got, you know, some of the whales, they have these teeth that kind of go down and they swim through and they kind of just like, excuse me, they kind of filter the krill into their teeth. You know, they filter out all the big stuff. But if the whale opens its mouth, it's this big, gaping, giant hole. You know, they're filtering out the tiny things, but they're ignoring the major things in their lives. And that's exactly what Saul is doing here. He's saying, "Oh, yeah, I'm obeying your command. I'm trying to do all of these things that you said that I need to do," without, while he's ignoring the major thing that he is supposed to be doing. The major thing he was supposed to do was to destroy everything completely. You know, we do this too. We worry about bad language. And we worry about other people who, you know, they smoke or drink alcohol, or maybe they have tattoos. We worry about other people. And we worry about propriety and things like that, while we harbor unforgiveness and bitterness and malice and jealousy. Yeah, I'm being a good Christian. I grew up in the church. I know what it means to be a good Christian. You go to church on Sundays, and any other time the doors are open. And you read your Bible every day, and you pray before every meal, and before bed, and you give offering every week. And I was raised really well. You didn't just give something, you gave 10%. You give 10% every week, which I appreciate being instilled, you know, that value. I appreciate that. But that's being a good Christian. If you have spent any amount of time in the church, you know what it means, what it looks like to be a good Christian, right? Absolutely. We make sure that our attendance is good for everything. And we make sure that we're well dressed and clean shaven, and we make sure that we don't upset anybody. We make sure not to fight in front of other people, right? The classic illustration, and I feel bad for my parents being here this morning. You know, this was us when we were kids. You're driving to church, everybody's yelling the whole way. You've got six people in the car. Well, for us, we had six people. The Volkswagen van again is a box driving down the highway. And everybody's yelling at each other because, the kids are late getting into the vehicle. Dad wanted to leave 10 minutes ago. Sometimes he did just leave. And, you know, but the second you step out of the vehicle and there's other people around, you go from to, "Hey, how you doing? Good to see you this morning. How are you doing? Great." How many of you have ever done that before? Be honest. Because we have it all together, right? Being a good Christian means that we have it all together. At least we want everybody to know we have it all together, right? That's what being a good Christian is, right? You know I'm going to say no. The answer to that is no, that's not right. But we do that. Our natural tendency Just like in our culture, we naturally want to side with the rebel. Our natural tendency for us as people, it doesn't matter what culture you're a part of, our natural tendency is to fight our will with God's will. And it's not in the things that don't matter. You see, because honestly, whether you give 10% or whether you don't give on Sunday morning isn't the issue. You know, when they pass the offering plates around? That's not the issue. The issue is, do you trust God to provide for your needs? And or, do you have a spirit, a will of generosity? But we make it about the other stuff, the non-important thing, the non-important aspect. That's what it becomes about. And we do that in plenty of areas in our lives. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 3. To do what is right and just is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. That is the theme verse. That is the lesson from the story of Saul's kingship. His entire life is summed up in that verse. Unfortunately, he got it wrong. To do what is right and just is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Do you know how many verses are devoted in Scripture to sacrifice? Have you ever read through Leviticus? There are so many rules and laws and commands regarding sacrifice and when it's to be done and how it's to be done and who's to do it and who shouldn't do it and when you shouldn't do it and all of these things connected with sacrifice. But that wasn't the point. The point is to be in a right relationship with God. The point was to live in obedience to God. The sacrifice was connected to that. In other words, when you were no longer living in a right relationship with God, you would offer a sacrifice. And when you wanted to seek God's will in your life, you would offer a sacrifice. Now, for Saul, the issue here, the rebellion, the way he went about this, the real issue is that he was trying to manipulate God. He was trying to seek God's blessing, not his direction. In other words, Saul had something in mind that he wanted to do, and so he wanted God to bless that instead of changing his life to do what God wanted him to do. And we do this too. Lord, I've made this decision, bless it. Lord, I know what I want to do, make it go well. God, I know this meal is absolutely awful for me, but please just change it so that it makes me healthy. I mean, it's essentially what we're doing, right? Lord, bless this food to our bodies. Bless this entire chocolate cake. For me, it'd be, you know, bless this pound of chocolate I've eaten in 10 minutes. Or whatever other thing we do. We said, okay, this is what I want to do. Okay, God, you make it work. And you make it work well, and you make it turn out good, okay? We do that with all sorts of things. We manipulate and we say, oh, okay, we wanna make it happen this way, and we expect God to make it work well. We do that with worship, we do that with services, we do that with all sorts of parts of our corporate life, and we do that with our individual lives as well. But that's the battle. That's the fight. That's the rebellion that Saul had. And that's the battle that we have is our wills and God's will. And God would rather have us forego the sacrifice so that we can learn to do what is right and just. Now, I want to point out, it says to do what is right and just is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Jesus said to the Pharisees, you should have done the latter without foregoing the former. You should have sought justice and mercy without not tithing. Okay, you still tithe. You still give. You still do these things that are connected to what really matters. But the things that are connected to what really matters, if they have to step aside so that you can focus on what matters, then do that. That's right. To do what is right and just is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. So I'm giving you permission to not give when the offering plates come by. I'm giving you permission to not give. I like to say things that other preachers will never say. When we have announcements and we say, you know, we've got this thing going on and we want help and we want you to be a part of it and we know you'll grow and we know you'll get meaning out of it. We had the food pantry Thursday night and we didn't celebrate this, but we had 113 families. And God provided food and it blows my mind. I've got to share this. It has nothing to do with the sermon, but I've got to share this. So I didn't share it during prayer and praise time. I apologize for totally interrupting the sermon, but I have to share this. Blows my mind. 113 families. 2 months, the 2 previous months, we had upper 70s, low 80s. We had dipped down tremendously. And for the past 3-4 months, the food we've been able to get has fluctuated wildly. And it's, you know, we make an order from Gleaners and it's half of what we actually ordered. And we go to pick up food, or we can't go to pick up food there, or we go to pick up food there and they don't have much to give us, or we don't know where it's coming from, and Crestdale had a food drive, and I heard that this was one of the largest collections they've had in recent years. Okay, I want you to hear that. This is one of the largest collections at Crestdale that the students bringing in food, canned goods and box goods. And they filled our shelves with this extra food. And we don't know where it's coming from. And it's all over the place. But every single month, God provides what we need for the people that we are going to serve. And He does it before they come to our door. And we don't know. But I'll tell you, if we end up with that whole building over there full of food, we're going to be calling everybody and their brother or sister to come help us, because we're going to know that we're going to have a ton of people. God, why did I get on that? I'm sorry, I had to share that. I had to share that. Thursday night, 113 families, 311 people that were served in those families. 40 of them were new families. Okay, out of 113, 40 of them have never been to our food pantry before. And I praise God for using that. But I give you permission to not come. I give you permission to not come to food pantry. I give you permission to not come to the clothing bank when we have the clothing bank on the first Saturday of the month. Or when we have a clothing bank work day, I give you permission to not go to that. I give you permission to not come to church on Sunday. I give you permission to not do any of these other things that we look at and we say, okay, I need to do that to be a good Christian. And I'm going to give you an alternative to that. Their alternative starts with something that we say every week, or we should say it every week, when we celebrate communion, when we celebrate Christ's death and resurrection. The alternative is that you give your life to Jesus Christ. If you've not been immersed, then you say, I want to be God's person. I want Him to be my God. I want to be united with Christ in His death, in His burial, in His resurrection, so that I can have life, so that I can have forgiveness for my sins, so that I can have the Spirit living in me. That's where we start. But the next alternative is any of those things that are connected with what we think, that's what it means to be a good Christian. That's what I need to do to be a good Christian. I want you to set that aside in your mind. And if you have to, you set that aside in your life for a moment. And I want you to be willing to have serious conversation with someone else who has been a Christian for a long time. Someone you would look at as a mature Christian. Someone who has displayed grace and mercy and forgiveness and gentleness and patience and kindness and goodness and self-control. Because that's the kind of person who knows that it's not just all of those little things that are important. But if your life is about those other things, then you're missing the boat. You're missing what matters. I hadn't thought of this before, but no, Erica, he's fine. Sit down. No, he's my sermon illustration. Because, you know, young parents with young kids, you get flustered and you get frustrated and you get confused. And I had such a hard time when we had our first daughter. I'd get mad. I'd get upset that my wife wouldn't remove our child. Because, you know, I grew up in and was taught by men who, there were guys who would stop the service and ask someone to leave because that child was interrupting the Word of God, and that child was interrupting that time where people are connecting with God. And so I had such a difficult time, but God has shown me, and I've grown to understand that didn't matter. What mattered was that relationship. What mattered more was that child. What mattered more is our growth, our community. You see, that child is a part of our community. That child is a part of God's people. And all the time, as we learn, we have to learn what matters. We have to learn what matters to us, but more importantly, we have to learn what matters to God. And in your life right now, are you living in such a way that you're doing what God really wants you to do? I don't mean, are you at the job you think that God says you should have? I don't mean, well, you know, are you retiring at the right age? Are you prepared for that? I don't mean, are you grocery shopping at the right grocery store? What I mean is that are you showing forgiveness to the person who has hurt you? And are you showing mercy to the person who does not have anything? And are you showing self-control with the person who just keeps coming back, and they just keep coming back and back and back and frustrating you and driving you crazy and making you upset? Are you living what matters? There's a reason I said, I want you to forego all those things and have a conversation with someone that you see display that. Because community matters. And correction matters, and teaching matters. And you won't get those things by being the good Christian. You get those things by developing strong relationships with other Christians. And you can get that, and it goes hand in hand with serving together and with worshiping together. That's why I say those other things are not unimportant. But if they're keeping you from developing real, strong relationships that will help you to grow, then check your priorities.